All right. Well, we're pleased to be joined by the man. I believe Paul Feinbaum called you the OG of Texas media once upon a time. Bobby Burton on Texas football. Bobby, thank you so much for taking the time.
Happy to be here, Mike. How are you doing today?
Oh, man, I'm doing great, but not as well as those Longhorns that are catching on fire at the perfect time, Bobby. I mean, I'm just kind of curious because I know you're inundated with the Texas football scene, but where were things, let's say, 2 to 3 weeks ago compared to where they are today? What's the mood down there?
Well, basically 10 days ago and I don't know what, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I think every Texas fan was throwing their hands up in the air and saying, what is the world come to? They're losing by 17 to Mississippi State twice in the fourth quarter. I mean, they didn't come back once, they came back twice. And ever since then, I tell you what, Steve Sarkisian made a couple of changes, one of which was going to more 11 personnel, one running back, one tight end on the field instead of his typical 12 personnel, which is two tight ends. And he's kind of just said, Arch, go sling the ball around the park a little bit. And Arch has lived up to it. And it's also put more receivers on the field that I think gives Texas's offense a little more punch. Now Texas has an off week, as you know, and then they head to Athens in 10 days. And we'll see what happens because the Bulldogs playing a really good brand of ball themselves right now.
And again, you would be far more knowledgeable than I, so pardon my ignorance here, but it does seem, when I think back to Mississippi State, when I think Kentucky especially, it seemed like Texas damn near abandoned the running game. Was that just a complete lack of confidence in the offensive line, banged up running backs? What was the deal there?
Yes, all of the above. All of the above. Texas, Trey Wisner has been banged up all season long. He's finally gotten healthy. But C.J. Baxter, who was expected to be the top running back last year and this year potentially, is still a little banged up and a little bit of a pitch count. Add that to the fact that Texas has had a carousel of sorts on the offensive line. They just can't figure out what's going on at left guard most of the season. They finally made a switch against Vanderbilt that really seemed to work. They simplified the blocking scheme. They moved their starting center, Cole Hudson, out to left guard, inserted Connor Robertson at center, who's he's a senior by class, but a redshirt junior. That seemed to give the offensive line the focus and ability to pick up Vanderbilt's blitzes. I mean, Arch Manning was only hit once on Saturday. And Vanderbilt, Clark Lee, does a good job of disguising things. And so it feels like maybe they found something on the offensive line. I don't know if that offensive line is ever going to be this move them around type of offensive line, even when it's coming against a Mississippi State or Kentucky, or certainly against Georgia. That's just not who they are. They're too young. But to your point, I think they found a little something there in pass protection, and that might open up some run lanes. Now, they're not going to go for 200 against somebody, but 125 is certainly doable. They went for 100 against Vanderbilt.
Yeah. So, I mean, who is Texas? Do you think they found themselves here? I thought they dominated Vanderbilt, and then Vanderbilt made a nice little rally to make it seem close. But has Texas found something here, or is it possible they still? I don't want to say get exposed. That's maybe not the right word, but that they fall short with Georgia coming up at Georgia, Texas A&M, of course. Who is the real Texas?
I do think they found something. I still don't know who the real Texas is. So both things can be true. Right. I mean, I believe that the move to 11 personnel puts more athletic players on the field. You're starting to see them hit Ryan Wingo in open space. It's giving them a chance to double up on some defensive backs and blocking. Wingo has been a revelation in the run after catch. That's more of the Quinn Ewers style of offense that Sark had went away from under Arch Manning, but he's going back to it now. I just think that they found something. I just don't know if it'll be enough to beat a Georgia team that I think is peaking right now a little bit, frankly. I mean, they're playing really, really well on offense, more so than defense. I mean, Georgia's offensive juggernaut, which you don't think necessarily, but that's what they are. And so we'll see how it goes. But Texas is finding themselves. I just don't know if it's going to be enough. And that's what they play the games for, right?
Right. And one guy, Bobby, that you haven't referenced yet, Ryan Niblett. Why in the hell do people keep punting to him? I mean, has anyone asked that down there?
Yeah, he leads the country in punt returns, 24.7 yards per punt return. I will say this, without him, they don't win Kentucky, unquestionably. I mean, he's the only thing that put them in scoring range the whole night.
Right.
Without him, they don't make and beat OU by two scores, maybe. And now they were dominating OU in the third and fourth quarter at the line of scrimmage on both sides, by the way. And then, you know, he clearly contributed to the Mississippi State game with the return to tie the game with less than a minute to go. I think he's having an All-American season. I don't understand why people would punt to him. But, you know, as someone that follows Texas, I really don't mind it. So have at it. It would be my point.
If you had to bet the mortgage, as we like to say on the show, does Texas make the college football playoff?
I would not bet the mortgage on that under any circumstance. I do feel like they have a legitimate shot. I will say this. I think of any 9-3 team, if a three-loss SEC team gets in and it's not Texas, I would be surprised, because they will have beaten OU, Vanderbilt, as well as either Georgia or A&M to get there, right?
Right.
So I think that's a possibility. And with what we saw on the college football committee this week, having six SEC teams in the top 12, I think we noticed that they're trying to make sure four SEC teams get in this year, maybe a fifth. And so let's see what happens over the next couple of weeks. But I would not bet my mortgage on that. I do think that there's a very real possibility, though. I think Texas is playing its best ball at the right time.
Well, you may have kind of already alluded to this answer, Bobby, but who do you think is more realistic that Texas beats? Is it Georgia in Athens or Texas 8-4 in Austin?
Texas 8-4. That's A&M. They're making you eat those words this year, are they not, Mike?
Did, Bobby, they flipped it to the Longhorns. It says, well, who's 8-4 now? You know?
I would say on the surface, I would say A&M in Austin. Texas beat A&M 17-7 last year, and the score wasn't indicative of how badly they beat the Aggies. They beat them at the offensive line, defensive line, everywhere in between, except for A&M had a pick six. I mean, A&M did not score an offensive touchdown against Texas last year. OU hasn't scored one in the last 2 years, by the way, or three of the last four. And so Texas defense, I think Pete Kwiatkowski has a really good feel for some of the guys he plays frequently. So we'll see what that means for that A&M game. They certainly have upgraded at wide receiver. A&M's really, really good at wide receiver. Marcel Reed's improved. The situation with Le'Veon Moss makes you think, hey, they may not be as good at running back as they were early in the year, but the A&M offensive line has been a real difference maker. The thing I'm thinking right now and the path for Texas is to outscore some of these teams. And I think final last two games, we've seen a Texas team that might be able to outscore some people. Because when Arch gets on a roll, I know what everybody said, oh, he sucks and he can't play. And, you know, all of a sudden you look up and he's throwing bullets all around the field and it looks pretty and he's on time. I think that people got to realize that sometimes it just takes time for these guys to be who they're going to become. And we're seeing that right now with Arch. Does it continue on against a better Georgia team than a Vanderbilt team, right? That's the next step. And then A&M's defense, not quite as good. So I would give, and plus the game against A&M is at home for the long run.
Well, you kind of already went where I wanted to go with you, but here, Arch Manning, his improvement. And I mean, you're right. It's been totally unfair to him. You know, the criticism and even the praise. Shout out our guy, Paul Feinbaum. Hey, believe it or not, Bobby, he credits me for the, you know, he's the next Tim Tebow. He's going to Heisman. He said he wanted to say something ridiculous, like I always say on his program. So indirectly, I guess that was my fault. I apologize to Longhorn Nation. But, hey, he has steadily made improvement, and now he's starting to be this guy we thought he was. What has been key, you think, to Arch's better play as the season's gone along?
I think reps. I mean, repetition. I think they started pass protecting a little bit better against Mississippi State in that second half. And then last week against Vanderbilt, they were just impeccable at pass protection. And look, you look at Julian Say, and I'll give you an example. The Ohio State quarterback, he doesn't even get hurried. And so he completes 80% of his passes, right? Tremendous player, not taking anything away from him. But Arch, if you watch the Florida game, for example, and Texas played Florida, I mean, Texas couldn't pass protect with six against three Florida defensive linemen. I mean, it was bad, and so Arch was running for his life repeatedly. Heck, it was like that against UTEP for Texas. So I think it's a combination of reps and pass protection. He showed, I mean, and the one thing that people will not understand until they really dig in is how tough Arch Manning is. When I tell you that he's taken some licks this year that have just been, you know, otherworldly, he's got back up. I'm really impressed with him from that standpoint. And part of that leans into his leadership. So as he plays better, they already believe in him as a leader because he's willing to take the hits. And so now that building of what he could become potentially might is very realistic, I think, in the eyes of a Texas fan right now. We'll see if he hits it this year, next year, or if he ever hits it.
Right. We'll see. And also to your point, Bobby, Ty Simpson's another good example. He was running for his life the whole Florida State game. You know, they were being mocked the whole week for how they lost to that. And then they figured out predictions. And I think if he keeps it up, he's going to win the Heisman. I mean, it's just night and day different there.
Yeah, he may. I have a hard time right now with Ty Simpson winning the Heisman if Fernando Mendoza and Julian Sayin keep up what they're doing. And one of those two is going to remain unbeaten, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to think. I'm not taking anything away from Ty Simpson, by the way. It's just Mendoza's. I mean, what a revelation for Indiana. I can't believe they're doing what they're doing 2 years in a row. That's one of the stories of college football.
Bobby, I'll just clue you in here. At that SEC podcast, we give no respect to anything in the Big Ten. So he can throw 90 touchdowns. I don't give a shit. But hey, let me ask you about Sarkisian, though. Because, I mean, it wasn't that long ago where he was being questioned for his play calling. And that's routinely, like, that's what he's known for, his elite ability to play call and game design and things of that nature. And I'm sure you saw it. Because I saw it where after Texas lost in the playoff, you know, it was making the rounds. Hey, you know, I think there's been like one or two head coaches in the history of college football that have been the offensive play caller and won the national championship. So I know that's kind of a loaded question, but were you surprised at all that Sarkisian was getting questioned about his play calling? And can they win it all if he refuses to give that up?
First of all, I saw it firsthand happen, transpire, right? And frankly, I do believe that he was having some issues on offense. They couldn't block anybody. What play are you supposed to call if you can't block anyone? Mm-hmm. When he went to more 11 personnel, Mike, it allowed I think it gave him more options, and that's what we've seen the last two game and a half, really. It spread him out. The blocking is more simplified. He's got more upperclassmen now on the offensive line. I mentioned the move of the center out to left guard. I think that's been a revelation, but he's always been a great play caller. One thing that most SEC fans will not know, unless you follow Texas religiously, is that AJ Milwee, the quarterback coach, had been a sideline guy for a year and a half, going back to Quinn's sophomore year. Prior to the Mississippi State game, Sark moved AJ Milwee up to the booth. And ever since then, the offense seems to be clicking a little bit better. I think Milwee's helping with earlier calls to get ready for the next possession a little bit more and allowing Sark to be a little bit more addressing other things going on. But that has certainly helped, I think. That's something that fans need to take note of. Milwee has called plays before in the MAC. So I think that's been a big piece.
Mm-hmm. And then how about this wild rumor here that right before Mississippi State, of course, Sark to the NFL. But thoughts on all that, how that transpired, and is there any truth to the and you know, the only thing I've heard about it is, you know, which is kind of obvious, but there's a lot of pressure in Austin. Is the pressure at all to deliver a national championship? You think that's getting to Sarkisian at all?
No, I don't think the pressure gets to Sark, really. He's a pretty cool customer now. The one thing I will say is he's ultra competitive. So I don't think that kind of pressure to win it all is about. I think he puts that on himself, actually. Like he wants that. You know, at the same time, I think that he ultimately might have NFL aspirations. I don't think it's now. I don't think it's this year unless, you know, something happens. But I think he's extremely well paid. He has a $6 million buyout of his own if he were to leave early. There are a number of different pieces. Plus, he has Arch Manning. I mean, all comments now, I mean, he's coming back next year. So are you going to leave that where you really might have a chance? I mean, because next year, Texas should bring back, I think, what, 8 starters on both sides of the ball, eight and seven, something like that. If they do that, that's going to be a pretty good team in 2026. And then we can see where it goes. But I'm pretty sure that I don't know that what was and wasn't true about name being dropped. I don't follow that. I think you and I have been around this long enough where we know everybody's name is out there all the time. And so if you want to comment on a rumor, I could comment on, you know, Lincoln Riley being ready to go to Texas Tech or LSU tomorrow, right? If they called, you know, there's all those rumors out there that some are reasonable, some are unreasonable. But, you know, these guys are all, they're all mercenaries of a sort, right? They go where they're hired. I mean, so we'll see what happens, but I don't think anybody at Texas should be like worried about it at this point.
Yeah. And I think it's fair to say that, I mean, virtually maybe every single one of these college coaches, if an NFL team called them tomorrow and said, "Hey, will you be our head coach?" I think most of them would say yes. So that's why it was kind of weird that report came out, because that's almost like Captain Obvious, you know, Lane Kiffin, Josh Heupel, even Kirby Smart. And I don't think those calls are being made. So that's why it's kind of ridiculous to even suggest that, just because everything that comes with the NFL and the headaches of college football. I mean, it was kind of like a Captain Obvious. It was just weird to me that they singled out Sarkisian and then the aftermath and the fallout. I mean, it would have been pretty bad, don't you think, had they lost that game, even if it was completely unfounded, had they lost that game and that report came out just prior to?
Oh, no, it was. I mean, it was, you know, a Cat 4 hurricane coming through Austin, Texas for me. So, I mean, I get it. My thought on it in all of these jobs are, you know, these coaches have to make a living just like you and I, you know? And so I don't begrudge them for listening to other jobs. I mean, you've been in a situation where you've listened for another job. How can you begrudge them? The reality of it is I was more concerned with how The Athletic, which is the company that put that report out, positioned that report on social media. So if you read the article itself, Steve Sarkisian was one sentence at the very bottom of the article. And it was almost a throwaway line by this reporter, to her credit, actually. It wasn't like the centerpiece of her article. It was one throwaway line. But yet, when it made it to social media, The Athletic said, Steve Sarkisian looking at other jobs. That was the lead on social media. And so fans who didn't read the article and didn't understand the idea behind it, I think they were literally thinking, what's going on? Is he's automatically going somewhere, right? Because not everybody has a subscription to The Athletic. They didn't read it. Mm-hmm. And I think that was poor taste by the folks at, and poor decision by the social media team at The Athletic, unquestionably.
Yeah, a bad time to let you know, Bobby. That's my side job. I do the social for The Athletic. But all right.
No, you do not.
Hey, final question.
Maybe Shane does.
Really appreciate your time. Final question, Bobby. Texas A&M, undefeated. Only team in the SEC, undefeated. Now, Bama's undefeated in conference, but not overall. What's your thoughts on A&M? Do you think this is legitimate, or do you think it'll fall to pieces like it always does down there in College Station?
I think they're about probably a 75 to 85% chance to be undefeated when they play Texas in Austin day after Thanksgiving on that Friday night. I believe in what A&M is doing offensively in particular. I think their defense can still be had, and I think Mike Elko knows it. I mean, they won by three, 45-42 in Fayetteville. Now, Arkansas has a good offense, but that shows that Texas A&M defense can be had. I just think their offense right now is operating at such a high level, and they can beat you in so many different ways. They're really impressive.
Yeah, yeah, and that was something that I remember you and I were questioning, how good is Marcel Reed? He looks the part this year so far.
He is. He's not perfect still. A lot of people are trying to make him a Heisman candidate. He's not as good as Ty Simpson right now. He's not as good as the Mendoza or Sain or those kind of guys. But he is what they need, because in a Colin Klein offense, he can run and he presents that run threat. He throws the short stuff really well. Especially the delays over the middle, you know, the rub routes, and then he throws enough downfield. And they've got, with Craver and Concepcion, they've got two big play guys right now. They're a good team, particularly on offense right now. Really, really good team.
Yeah. All right, Bobby, really appreciate you. Before you go, tell my audience how to find the show and how to follow you on the social medias.
Yeah, absolutely. And the social medias, plural. I love it. Go to On Texas Football on YouTube. You can watch myself, Jerry Hamilton, Rod Babers, Jeff Howe, CJ Vogel. We have daily updates multiple times a day on the Longhorns. That's what we cover. Also, we have ontexasfootball.com. Mike, it's always good to be part of this. And it's interesting. We're sitting here. Y'all yapped about Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC and how they were going to be so bad and all this other stuff. And I don't know, man. Doing okay over here in Austin and Norman right now.
Yeah. Oh, man. I love it. They have made the league infinitely better. And now, thankfully, we got a 9-game conference schedule coming. The best just gets better. You know what?
I love it. I love the 9-game conference schedule. Absolutely love it.